Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
American Glutton Podcast has a Patreon. Do you hate commercials? Well, we've got a Patreon. Do you want bonus episodes? That's on the Patreon. Do you want to hang out and chat in our Discord channel? That's part of the Patreon too. We even have an option where you can leave me voicemails. All on the Patreon. So check it out today. Patreon.com/American Glutton. We have a Patreon.
Hi. I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. American Glutton is brought to you by Trifecta. The biggest factor in weight loss for me has been knowing ahead of time what I'm going to eat and having it ready when I need it. Trifecta meal deliveries have made this completely effortless for me and have been a total game changer in both diet and maintenance. Go to www.trifectanutrition.com/American Glutton to make your life and physical goals a whole lot easier. My guest today is Dr. Spencer Nadolski. He is a physician and an obesity and lipid specialist. Today we are discussing whether obesity is a choice or not. You can find him on Instagram at Dr. Nadolski. Stay tuned after the episode for this week's follow-up with Mike Pena. Dr. Spencer Nadolski, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
This is what number is this? Four? This is
four. Four or five. Okay. I want to start by saying that you wrote something 7 years ago that, I think was timely then, but it has cropped up and become a topic amongst people. And I think there's a lot to discuss here, but the topic is obesity a choice? This is what we're talking about today.
That's what we're talking about.
So from my perspective, I spend a lot of time trying. I really do try my best to go like, somebody said something that I generally disagree with. I want to try to see how they're right. What is their perspective that leads them to that?
Right.
There's a gym bro who goes, obesity is just a choice, man. Just choose, And I go like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
Totally. However, I do think the solutions all require choice.
Yes.
And then it's effort and all this other stuff. But I think that the guy with perfect genes who never developed bad habits as a kid, who has maybe pristine health education and nutrient and nutritional education and just naturally likes working out. And I said, genes, but let's double down on genetics. That choice that that guy's making is a lot different than the choice that I'm making.
Yes.
And so to just make it a binary choice, or you're choosing one or the other, for me, I go like, I don't think those choices are the same.
Right.
You know,
it's choosing a physiological state. It's more of like a rhetorical, it can't even really be answered. Although, like, so 7 years ago, I wrote the blog. It went viral back then when actually blogs were like a thing. They're not really a thing anymore. Some people still write stuff, but not as popular now. It's all about the short little TikToks and right. reels and whatever.
Memes. You've got to communicate it in one sentence or less. Otherwise, yes. it's too much.
You forget it. Forget it. Yeah. Some people like the YouTube thing. Whatever. Doesn't matter. They're listening to the podcast, though, so that's good. People yeah. that are listening. So that means they like longer form. So I wrote it back then in terms of like a kind of rhetorical type of question. Is it really a choice? So the reason I wanted to talk to you about this is because you've lived through this.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to hear your perspective of like when you were younger.
So in the present, right? I will talk about my childhood, but in the yeah. present, the only thing I can really equate it to is substance abuse stuff. Cause I'm mm-hmm. also a recovering drug addict. And, mm-hmm. and so, my wife can have a glass of wine. And then if it's all a choice, she can choose to not have a second glass of wine. I've tried to do that. It's been a long time since I tried to do that, but I have tried to do that because there was a long period of my life where I had real severe substance abuse problems. And then when I would think about like getting off hard drugs, I would go, but like, I'm going to be able to drink, you know, often it was like, well, I'll use alcohol to numb the discomfort I'm feeling from getting off something else. And so this idea of choice in that, for me, I have to be abstinent. There is no universe where I choose, you know, maybe I get through one sitting where I choose to have one glass of wine, but this is not something that I feel strongly that I can continue to be successful at. And so in the same way, there's similar parallels. I know that food is not biologically addictive in the way that substances are, but there are behavioral addictions and compulsions and all kinds of weird people are doing stuff with food that they don't want to be doing. Right. And so, so in that sense, I just think that calling it a choice to me, you miss so much nuance and you miss so much yeah. of what people are going through. And if it makes you feel better that you're super strong and able to make this simple choice, then I go like, okay. You know, as a kid, my first experiences where I was even thinking about my body as something that I had involvement in, right? So the first time I separated this idea of my body is a thing and not necessarily me, right? Because this is like a weird concept, you know, because mm-hmm. I don't even know if that's necessarily true, but I do sit here and go like, there was a point in my childhood where my body became this bad thing, this negative thing. And there was some separation where I wanted my body to be a good thing, and yet it was a bad thing. And I was put on diets and I habitually cheated at these diets. And I wasn't, as a little kid, going, I'm being told my body is bad. I want a good body. I'm told that the way to get a good body is through diet or diet and exercise. And yet I'm not finding the ability to make that choice. So it's fucking gets really complicated.
Yes. So that's that. How old were you?
Five.
That's pretty young. Cause usually the way I describe it is most people go through life in, you know, you'll see these fitness bros like, it's just a choice. You may, and sure, it might be a bunch of choices, but it's just a choice. I'm like, so every single action that you do during the day that has relation to your physical activity and your eating, which is like, I don't know, hundreds of choices per day. I choose to sit here right now talking to you as opposed to maybe going for a walk, whatever. So all throughout your life in childhood, are you choosing, do I want obesity or not? Every minute of the day? No. So what's interesting is that you at a younger age, though, is what I usually give the description for. Most people go through their life passively and maybe they kind of know that they're gaining weight, but it's subconscious to them. It's not in their mind, and they're not choosing at every meal. Hey, I want obesity. Yep, I want obesity. Yep, I want obesity. Or right. No, I don't want obesity. It's more just like, I'm just eating because I want to eat and this tastes good. And I'm just living my life. It's subconscious. But for you,
But let me say, I'm recounting that through the lens of everything I've gone through. So as a five-year-old kid, I was experiencing shame for the first time at five. And I can distinctly remember a period at the beach with my shirt off and having no idea. There was just like no perception of my body at all. It didn't exist. It wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
I was just at the beach and I liked being at the beach and I'm playing. And like a year later, I've got a shirt on. I'm sitting on a towel because I'm terrified of people seeing me walk to the water. And so all that started. So they weren't literal thoughts like I described. This is through the lens of like 20 years of thinking about this a lot where I go, oh, that's what was happening. I was feeling shame. I was withholding myself from physical activity because I had been told that I was fat and this was bad. Yeah. And then I'm being put on diets to solve for me being fat. And I didn't like that. And so I cheated at my diets. I don't think I was ever choosing anything.
Right. So now we get into, you were even conscious of it, but even still, you didn't feel as if you had free will almost in a way.
No, my free will was expressed in, I'm not happy with having my food restricted, so I am going to eat when people aren't looking. That was my expression of free will. And it wasn't literal. I wasn't sitting there thinking that thought. It was just that's the way I can sum up the experience I had.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, I'm glad we're having this discussion because, you know, coming from me, they're just like, you're a Dr. Big Pharma shill, whatever you want to say.
Right.
It means more coming from someone who lived through it, especially at a younger age. And so how do you convince people? So of course I make this post every few months, and every time I post it, everybody gets mad. And, you know, I actually had a good conversation with Greg Doucette. He's got a big YouTuber. He invited me on because he was like, came onto my Instagram. It's like, no, obesity is a choice. Of course it is. And I was like, okay, let's have this conversation.
Right.
So we actually had a pretty good conversation about it. And that's, I think you saw my, because Jeff Nippard posted about, he made a video about it. And then of course, the same thing, you know, we all have different types of followers, but his followers were mad at him and basically said he's woke, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It's the typical type of stuff. And most people will say it's a group of choices, and of course, you can make the choice to not have obesity. So what's interesting though is that by the end of the conversation with Greg, we basically came to a similar agreement in that if we're calling it a choice, so like for example, once you develop, I say it's not a choice developing it, because even though you were kind of conscious of it, It wasn't till later you actually could figure out how to make a conscious choice to fight back against it.
But it took decades, dude.
Yes.
But it took decades before I even got to the point where I could go like, oh, I think I can do something about this.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. That's the point I'm talking. So most people, they get to that point, not a choice. Okay, so now you've developed the obesity, the weight, the excess weight, whatever you want to call it. And now you're like, okay, can I make a choice? You're able to fight back. You're fighting back right now, every day. You know, we've had these conversations. It's very conscious every single day. You have to put in effort. Now, there are some people that seem to still struggle. And that's where I talk about the disease of obesity. You know, our environment's fighting against us. We have whether psychology, I would say a lot of what you felt was also physiology, some of these biological things that occur in the brain. Lots of overlap with addiction, but there's other little things that go on that have to do with our reward center and our satiety. And people don't see that,
right?
You know, I don't think they understand it at all. But at the end of the conversation, we basically got to the point where it's like, okay, if it would be a choice to then start, if you wanted to get surgery, that's a choice to make that decision. It's a choice to fight back once you're conscious of it. Like it took you a while to even get to that point. It's no guarantee that you're going to lose weight. Although we got to the point where I suppose you could have somebody lock you in a room. This is so extreme. It's not even a practical choice though. Someone could lock you somewhere, chain you to something and basically starve you. You could pay somebody to do that, and you could get all the drugs and surgery and whatever. And if you want to go that extreme to where that's a choice, it's not even practical. It doesn't even make any sense, but I suppose it would be a choice in that, because then we can't overcome physics. You would start wasting away, but that's not practically true.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Look, you get to the point with substances and for me, it was largely opiates, and you get to the point where you're like, this is messing my life up. Yeah. My life is unmanageable because of this, and I can't do this anymore. And then there's a pretty long period of time where existence without them is almost worse than what you were experiencing right as you made that decision. And so within that universe, the ability to make a choice that is of no consequence because you're not being subjected to pain because you choose not to take heroin. I don't know your history with drugs, but like as of today,
yeah,
you can choose not to take heroin and it doesn't change your life at all. If you're a junkie, you're facing potentially years where your brain chemistry isn't going to be able to process happiness in the same way. The whole dopamine system has been so stretched and suppressed that when we experience joy as accomplishment, that doesn't happen anymore for a while. And so you get into the doldrums of, God, it's just not worth it. And so much in the same way as you wake up one day obese, your knees hurt, your back hurts, you're not fitting in public spaces comfortably, and you go, God, I want to change this. A similar mechanism happens where like, if you do something too extreme, which is really being sold en masse in today's world, mm-hmm. like just do X, Y, and Z, which by the way is almost all predestined to fail and get you to do it again. But you do this really extreme thing, a week or two or even a month into it, the misery is going to weigh more than the misery of the day you made the decision to change. And so I go like, that's not the same choice as a dude who likes working out. It's just not. Yes. And so if it is a choice, I would just ask people to have empathy with like, okay, fine. If it's just a choice, realize it's a different choice for me than it is for you, a guy who's not experienced this.
Yeah. You liked my comment there. First of all, that's scary. That's some scary shit you just discussed. Like, imagine you're trying to make a change for the better and you feel like it's not even worth it. You get to this point, it sucks, it's painful, and you're like, I'd rather just continue having that weight or continue the drugs, whatever.
The other pain is not as bad as the pain I'm in now. Well, I mean, where's the choice there?
Right. How long did it take, by the way, for you not to feel that other pain?
From drugs?
From both.
From food.
Both.
You know, I will say that I failed at many diets that I think, and food is very different simply because there's no abstinence from food.
Right.
We eat and this becomes even, so it becomes actually more complicated, right?
Yeah. Yes.
But with drugs, there's a long period of time where you just have to convince yourself that you're going to feel good again, right? That you're going to feel normal, whatever normal was. By the way, a lot of the drugs were to escape whatever you felt, whatever your normal barometer was, you wanted, that was so bad that you want to do drugs just to not have to deal with that. So just convincing yourself that you'll get back to that is tricky because it's like, God, that was pretty bad. If I'm just aiming to get back to that. So there's that. And, you know, being around like-minded people who've gone through it, sharing the experience with them and hearing that, that somebody else has made it, that's super helpful. And hearing about other people's experiences and then sharing your own experience and being vulnerable, I found all that super helpful. And then there's some real work to do, right? To actually start to confront, like, what in my life was so bad that I was doing X, Y, and Z. Same with food. Like, I eat out of anxiety. I eat out of joy. I eat out of sorrow. I eat out of boredom. Why am I doing that? What is it that I'm escaping? What is it that I'm trying to control? So I have to confront all of that. Like, it's a lot of work. It's not just, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore. I mean, that's certainly part of it, but that's like a tiny little part of it.
Yeah. Imagine having an itch that you got to scratch and you're like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And it just keeps getting itchier and itchier. You're like, fine. I'm going to scratch that itch. You know, the analogy that I came up with was, and I don't know, maybe there are better ones, but New York to LA, some people can fly. So this analogy works when somebody has obesity and decides that they want to resolve it. New York to LA, some people, they're going to fly. They're able to fly and they get there pretty quickly, somewhat painlessly. Other people, they drive. Some people have to, unfortunately, bike. And then there's some people that are going to have to walk. That choice kind of sucks.
Right.
I'm pretty sure they can do it. I know they can, but practically probably not going to happen for most people. They're not going to walk. And so there are a large number out there of people who are with obesity that are going to have to walk. It sounds bad. And it's easy for, you know, the fitness types of people to say, I don't get it. Just get in a calorie deficit, just eat some chicken breasts and broccoli and some brown rice or whatever.
Yeah. Well, what about the kid who's raised in, what do they call it? Food deserts, right?
Yeah. So that was kind of the blog type of thing that I came up with. So
what's that? What choice is that kid making?
Right. So here's the example. And this gets extreme, but it's more common than what we'd think. First of all, you know, we can't choose our parents. Then there's some data to show that these kind of epigenetics, the switches that turn on and off some of our genes, and hopefully if there's any geneticists listening, they're like, oh man, that guy's just bastardizing this term. what our parents do in utero, you like even what your dad was doing when you and your mom they conceived, you know. So sperm, the mom during pregnancy, what they eat and do, physical activity, what they eat, maybe has an effect on offspring as well. Maybe it probably does. Then
well, the Dutch hunger winter, that study. I love that study. And that for me, I know it's one study, and you sciencey people like lots and lots of studies, but that pretty much shows that obesity occurred to all the children who were there was a genetic shift while they were, while their mothers were pregnant, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I mean, these things have powerful outcomes. And so, you know, and they're like, well, it's still a choice. They're like, well, you know, subconsciously, if you're younger and you just have a little bit bigger serving sizes, you may even choose to try to eat healthier when you're younger, but nobody chooses. Again, it's all subconscious. You're not thinking about that. You're served what you're given when you're younger. Like your parents feed you whatever. You're like, no, mom, I would like some salmon and broccoli, please. And they're like, right. get the hell out of here, kid.
Yeah.
Here's a pizza or whatever. I don't know. So you eat slight changes in your appetite and satiety centers and reward centers. So you eat a little bit more than other people. And slowly over time, you start gaining weight. Is that a choice? So in the blog that I wrote, it was all, you know, I should probably update it with, you know, what I understand a little bit better. But the whole point was like, there's a lot of stuff out of our control that we're not even thinking about, you know, breastfed babies versus formula fed babies. Is there a mechanism there? Maybe, maybe not. Whether you're vaginal or C-section, is it a true mechanism? I don't know. There seems to be something there. Maybe, maybe not. Those were not choices of ours. You know, growing up, obviously, you know, upbringing makes a big difference, not just genetics. As you said, my dad was the wrestling coach and had a key to the weight room. We went really young. He was all into nutrition. So I was. I got into wrestling, football. I was really into it. Favorable genetics, you know, so whatever, hard work. But other people, you know, maybe their parents work two jobs. Maybe they're a single mom. They got to work two jobs. And so the kid might start getting behavioral issues. I have a lot of people that have been on psychiatric medicines for a long time because they had anger issues or mood issues at school. Those medicines can increase appetite and change where you kind of store the fat over time. And again, these are extremes. You start adding all these things in. And like you said, it was just like subconscious until finally later someone develops the obesity over time, not by any choice of their own, with their surroundings. They have whatever food deserts. It doesn't matter. You could just put somebody anywhere, not in an affluent area, and they're more likely probably to develop obesity, not because they could go get canned green beans. This is the argument's like, well, the food can be cheap. I post these things, and it's kind of silly because it's like, yes, of course, but the path of least resistance is always to get these super yummy, high calorie, palatable types of foods. Over time, people gain weight, not really consciously. And so that's the gist of what happens. Then to make a choice to fight back against it, once you develop the obesity, then your brain, you know, whether you want to talk about set points or not, our brains fight back against us. Once we start to try to lower our adiposity levels through appetite changes, you can fight back. You've done it through very strong efforts. I use medicines in patients to hit certain receptors in the brain to fight back against those cravings. In fact, what's interesting, some of the drugs I use, I don't use them as much anymore because these newer ones hit all the different receptors in different ways. But naltrexone is for alcohol cessation. Bupropion is used for smoking cessation. You actually combine those two medicines and they work both in the reward center in the brain for addictive like behaviors. And it can also help people eat less. Now these newer medicines, these GLP-1 medicines, these injectable medicines that I use, they work up in the brain in multiple levels, not only that reward center, but also satiety. So I'll see patients who have just struggled. They've lost 100 pounds and regained 100 pounds, you know, multiple times. I give them these medicines. They're like, I finally feel normal. They always knew, yes, I know I need to eat fewer calories. They know that already. It was just telling them it's a choice that doesn't work. They understand, but it's like, they just couldn't do it. You give them the medicine. They feel like all of a sudden I can do it now.
And I think that gets at the heart of the reason I want to talk to you about all of this is, what's the point in saying it's a choice? Like, if somebody's clearly making the choice that you don't like, how does telling them you're just making a choice get them to change their choice? You know what I mean? Like, because most of these people are
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal, and I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious, frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting. So cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Staunchly anti-obese, the people who are, it's just a choice. And I've seen a couple of people who have lost weight who talk about it being just a choice. And to them, I'm like, I think this is misleading, because I would be willing to bet you went through more than just making a choice one day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So I always ask, because those people will show up on my comments and they'll get a ton of likes. And I go, oh, so you chose to have obesity? You chose that?
Right.
Well, no, I mean, I was eating a lot. I was like, so you just chose, I want to have obesity. And they're like, no. And I'm like, right. You never chose that. You consciously made the choice now to fight back hard, and you found strategies to fight back. Well, yeah, I guess if you say it like that, yes, you can now make a conscious choice to fight back. It's just that, again, some people won't be able to fight back as hard, and that's where they need the help, as much help as they can get to fight those, whether it's environmental or biological or both, psychological. It doesn't really matter. We have tools to kind of fight all the different components of it.
Yeah.
Some of the people that have lost weight sometimes they can be the worst, because what they'll say is like, if I can do it, you can do it. And it's like, well, maybe you were the one that was able to fly from New York to LA, and all these other people are pieces of shit. Like,
right.
They don't want it bad enough. I don't think so. I think there's stronger biological drivers going on. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I mean, listen, within that analogy, I still feel like I'm walking. I'm still on the road and going like, I know I'll get there. LA is west. And so if I just stay on this path one day I'll get there, or I'll die trying. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe. But I prefer this journey to staying in New York and going like, well, I know there's another place I'd love to see, but I'm not going to go see it because it's a really long, hard path.
Yeah. What's driving you? I want to know how to instill, like, you know, it would be nice to instill what is driving you into my patients. It's hard. I don't know.
I gotta say, you know, my motivation is really my family, and I feel bad saying that because I can't give everybody my family or everybody, you know, if you don't have that or whatever, a version of that, then I don't want to say like it's hopeless. But also to your point about cost, we talked about cost. You mentioned cost. I'll come back to it. But as far as that goes, I don't know a single overweight person who hasn't tried multiple times to lose weight.
I don't either. One.
Yeah.
And 10 to 20 times I always hear from patients.
For sure. At least. And I'm a big fan of Lizzo. I would even be willing to bet somewhere in her life, she went on a diet with the intention of losing weight and has come to this, like, I'm not doing that anymore. And I'm proud of myself, and I'm happy for her. You know what I mean? Like, sincerely, I like her. I don't think the message to people who really want to lose weight, to stop wanting that. I don't like that message so much because I do believe that something can be done about this condition.
Yeah.
But it is a lot of hard work. So I don't know. I keep recreating this idea of my goal, and I keep reinventing it. You know, it was very narrow in the beginning. It was just, I need to lose weight, period.
Mm-hmm.
And it was finite because the goal ended every time I lost weight, and the goal could end after 5 pounds. If it was really hard and I lost 10 pounds, five is overnight easy for me. But if it was like, I'm doing something really hard, I lost 10 pounds. Okay, good. Now I can eat a cheeseburger. Right.
Yeah.
And so I've had to broaden it and go like, no, that's not my goal. My goal is to achieve some form of health that is really long-term, that I'm not having huge peaks and valleys with, but I still have ups and downs. It's not like maintenance for me is not a perfect score across the board. It does go like, hey, I went a little wild over the weekend, but a little wild for me is no longer ordering pizzas. A little wild is like, I eyeballed my rice. You know? I didn't perfectly measure my tablespoon of olive oil, and I got a little bit of a heavy pour. So I know when I'm doing that, I'm going, all right, I'm going to have to make up for this somewhere. You know what I mean? But it's like, this is my life. And this is my life where like, my wife has a glass of wine, and I look at that wine and I go, wouldn't it be nice to be a person who could have a glass of wine? It's unfortunate that I'm not that person.
Yeah.
You know,
what you kind of described is this acceptance-based kind of therapy. I try to get my coaches to do it with their clients, but it's instead of an end result, you're going more towards your values. It's like a compass because as you said, you could achieve your weight. It's like, well, now what?
Right.
And so you have to somehow find these other ways to just keep going with wealth. And for you, it's your family, which I think is great. And here's a question. Whenever I say obesity is not a choice, I wish I just could just say it's not really a choice, but that's a stupid question in the first place type of thing.
Yeah.
But people like, that's so demotivating and people aren't going to try anymore. That's not the goal, because I want people to know they can absolutely try to do something about it. I'm just saying it's going to be extremely hard, and just know that. And you may not be as successful as you want to be, but you can keep trying, and we have tools to try to help you, whether it's medicine, surgery, or behavioral therapies, or all of the above type of thing. Do you think it's demotivating to hear that it's not a choice? I don't know.
Well, I think the problem is I don't think it's a choice. I don't think obesity is a choice. I don't know a single person who's making that choice.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I just don't. I don't know a single alcoholic who's going, no, that's not true. I know a couple who are going like, fuck it, I'm going to be an alcoholic. That's not actually untrue. But even those people that I know have had periods where they wake up one day and they go, holy shit, what did I do last night? My life is unmanageable. I need help. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. So even they have I do think that change is a choice, but yes. I think it's so much more complicated than the idea of just make one choice. I think it's a million choices.
Yes.
And it's really hard. And depending on your environment and your circumstances and your genetics and your psychological makeup and all of these things, it's going to be more hard. And so, like, I don't know. This is why I go, like, what is the point in pushing this idea that it's a choice? Because you're simplifying something that's very complicated.
Yes. Yes. Humans like binary choice. You know, they like they like the yes and the no. So that would make sense that people keep bringing that up, but it is stupid. It's extremely stupid. And it shows a lack of, you know, my comment, it shows just a complete lack of understanding, of the disease condition, whatever you want to say. As you pointed out, based on your history and obviously my, experience with tons of patients, but, you described it very well, in the beginning of the podcast, like this isn't a choice.
I think if we're going to get super literal, if you're saying it's a choice, this is an absolute statement. And so if I can show you one instance that's not the case, then it just defeats, in my opinion, your argument of this absolute statement. And I would just go, you know, go to Detroit, go into the hood, go find a single parent raising multiple kids, look at what they're eating, find an obese one and observe him and watch. And you tell me if he's making a choice to be.
Yes.
Obese.
Yeah.
That's it.
There you go. Yes, exactly.
You know,
I think if people kind of listen to this and they go, no, you're right. Now, I do want people to understand, though, as they're listening, to know that they can make the conscious choice to fight back.
Yeah.
I can't tell you if you're going to be successful or not, at least on the first or maybe the 10th try. But, you know, again, we do have these tools just to help alleviate some of that biological pain that you're going through. When you try to make that choice, though, to try to kind of scratch that itch without having to use food to do it, type of thing.
Right. And like the thing that I'm most excited to talk about, and I repeat myself ad nauseum on here because I find it to be, and almost because I'm telling myself, and it's the one thing, like, you know, if I did Fit for Life and had success, which I've done, by the way, and did not, and definitely lost weight and then gained weight again. But my point is, if there was one thing that I thought was that which has helped me the most, it's this idea of maintenance. Mm-hmm. That's it. That for me, like, I don't care what you do. If you were confronting massive weight loss after a period of massive weight loss, hyper-focus on maintenance, like become an expert at maintenance, right? Before you do it again, you know, like if you're doing a liquid diet and you're going to do 30 days, good. After that, do maintenance and then do it again. Like that, and that's not, there's no maintenance diet book. This is not a thing. This is what the quote unquote sciencey guys talk about, you know?
Yeah.
It's and it's not one guy. There's lots of people who talk about this. It's like, it, not only is it something I have anecdotally experienced success with, there's a lot of research and studies that say like people generally are more successful when they do X, Y, and Z. And this is a big component of that. And so like, you know, I this this liver guy,
the liver king,
Like he says, like, all you have to do is these ancestral tenants and everything will be fine. And I go, like, if you got to lose 200 pounds, 100 pounds in, your body isn't going to just be going like everything's fine because I'm eating organ meat and getting sunlight and taking a walk every day. Your body is going to be going, we're fucking starving.
Yeah, yes.
Like, no matter what. And so what do you do then? Because, by the way, like, his ancestral tenants, I go, like, if you took an obese person who was sedentary and eating mostly processed foods and just had them do that, it's probably a huge benefit. Like, you might get a lot out of that. It sounds great. Sunlight, walks, eating whole nutritious foods. I'd say get a little more fiber than he talks about, but, like, whatever, that's, like, you know, really nitpicking, but that's not the be all end all. I don't believe in a be all end all to this stuff. And I don't think everybody's going to have the same success on everything. Like, maintenance for me doesn't have to be the exact same way anybody else eats for maintenance. I'm just saying, like, get really professional at understanding what you can eat in a day and what won't make you gain weight. You know what I mean? Like, that's really been the life changer for me, is this idea of, like, I'm far, far, far more hyper-focused on understanding my body in maintenance than I am at how do I lose weight? I can lose weight so easily, dude. So easily.
This idea of maintenance. So with this new telemedicine program where I'm slinging weight loss drugs across the country, close to 1,000 patients through it now since, like, October last, like, so like 6 months or so. Yeah. It's 8 months. And I love to hear their stories. I read their story and I have them kind of recap it. And I have so many people that have lost 100 pounds back 5 years ago. The pandemic happens. It threw them through a loop, or it doesn't have to be the pandemic. Something in their life shifted. Someone died. They got married. They changed their jobs. They moved. They had kids. Something threw them off their maintenance and they lost that focus. And of course, I talk about those biological drivers, and those drivers are all around us. But if something shifts in your life and it teeters the balance back into the environment's winning,
yeah,
slowly regain that. And it's so interesting to hear. It's like, how do you get people to, even if they get their life thrown off, to go refocus, come on, refocus before you gain, you know, 5-10 pounds, and just keeps coming to where you gain back that 50 to 100 to 200 pounds or whatever it was. It's an interesting concept. I don't know how to do it. It's not a sexy thing.
No, I do believe some part of me benefits from being a sober person, because there's so many parallels.
Yes. And
there's so many behavioral things which I go, like, I wouldn't be doing this behavior that I'm about to do. This would not be okay if that was wine, if that was pot, if that was cocaine, if that was heroin, if that was a painkiller. There is a hard line there, right, for me, that I can put everything through that lens and go, like, this behavior is pretty much the same. I'm just using a different substance now. I'm gonna get something out of this food that I no longer want to be getting out of food, which is an escape or a settling of my nerves or a cheering me up, or, you know, even just like, I'm bored and I want some entertainment somehow. You know what I mean? Like, all of those things, I got to find other ways in my life to experience those things or to deal with those things other than drugs and alcohol. And so when I look at food in that way, it becomes a bit easier to go, like, no, I can't do that. You know? So I don't know. I mean, you know, and I'm not an OA person. I knew about OA, but I don't even do OA, but I don't think it's like, I don't even know anything about it, to be honest with you. I don't know what the program is, but I think, like, if you got like-minded people to talk about, to talk to be vulnerable with, to share your issues. I don't think it's a bad thing, and it's free and it's probably everywhere.
Yeah. It support and community can be very powerful. I think for obviously eating, discussing strategies on how to avoid the pitfalls and all the different, I don't know. It's tough though. It's tough. Yeah. I mean, we have, you know, we have coaches, we have behavioral psychologists, you know, I use behavioral modification along with medicines. But honestly, we should have all these tools in the toolbox to use at our disposal to help, but even still not the total guarantee.
Right. Yeah. You know, I just think it's like, if you tell a kid with dyslexia to just try harder at reading, this is not a solution.
Yeah, that's correct.
You know what I mean? Just decide you're a good reader or, you know, work harder. And now, a kid with dyslexia is going to have to work harder to read, and many do. And so we know that there's stuff that can be done to help kids with dyslexia. That's not a choice.
Right.
You know, and I think there's many physiological things happening with obese people that is being discarded and going like, no, they just like McDonald's or whatever it is, whatever your idea of the choice is.
Yeah. It's a big problem with stigma. I mean, I think I look back at like when I was younger, I'd always look around and be like, why is that guy so big? Why is a guy or girl so big? Like, why don't they just like work harder?
Right.
And then it wasn't until, you know, medical school, learning about it, and then learning from other doctors who deal with it, and then having the patients describe their stories, and I'm like, oh, I was a real dumb shit. I didn't know. I was so there's stigma that's just kind of ingrained into us. And you know, I think it's good things like this. With social media is a double-edged sword, of course. You get the pockets of people that are like-minded. But I've noticed, you know, since I wrote that blog and trying to be vocal on social media, and there's a lot of other vocal people on social media, this podcast will help. More people are kind of opening up to this idea that's like, oh, I guess it's probably not as much in control of it as we think. Again, I don't want to misconstrue. I think we have control to make the decision to try to fight back. But developing it and being, no matter what, successful, not as much in our control, but we have control to fight it, I will say. So I think hopefully it's opening up people's minds.
Yeah, I think the other problem is all these guys who say it's a choice, or the majority of them, are...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
you know, even if we don't just assume what their idea of a good diet is, because I would be willing to bet their ancestral tenant people or whatever, maybe not. Maybe they're all, you know, eating chicken, broccoli and rice three times a day. Or
macros.
Right. Yeah. They're macro bros or they're calories in, calories out bros who are, you know, giving up their rice for a pint of ice cream at the end of the day. Who fucking knows what these guys are doing? But like I guess I'm probably more in this than the average Joe, simply because I talk about it a lot and I follow a lot of people who talk about it a lot and I'm paying attention. The two messages that seem to be the loudest right now to me are vegan is the correct choice to make for everyone, or carnivore is the correct choice to make for everyone. Those are the loudest, and they and I go like, I wouldn't recommend either of those things as a solution to obesity.
No,
like, you know, I just wouldn't.
It's kind of like, I mean, it's politics. The loudest people are like the most extreme. I think most people are in the middle, somewhere in the middle. You know, you get some variances there, but these loudest people are what you hear, and it drives me insane because I just want to fight them. You know, right. I just want to be like, no, you idiot. Unfortunately, those loudest extreme people are what the more extreme is in, when you learn about marketing, people love that shit. They eat it up because it's different. It's exciting. It's like, wow, what's this new thing? Kind of new and shiny. But it's crazy. It's not what most people actually would do.
Yeah.
You know, people can do a, I don't care if people do a carnivore diet. I have some patients that have done it. They've done great. But I've also had a ton of patients that have done that similar type of thing, carnivore or just keto. You know, they might have thrown in some broccoli, gotten crazy and thrown in some broccoli in there with their ribeyes, but, you know, they couldn't stick to it. They didn't like it. They might've liked the broccoli and, butter on their ribeyes, but, ultimately they wanted to eat other stuff. And then you got the vegans, you know, like everybody's, I know a lot of people have tried the plant-based thing. I've done both types of diets and it's like, man, I don't know how anybody would stick to this. It's extreme. And those people are the loudest though. So you hear them, you see them, they go viral, you know, Liver King, man, the guy's eating what I don't even know. He's eating like him and another guy, they're eating testicle, cow testicles, bull testicles. So it's like, wow, that's funny. Let's share this. And then, so that kind of stuff goes viral. So you see it, but it's like, most people aren't like that and they aren't solutions. Because most people won't actually do those things for long-term. And I'm not sure even if they could do it long-term, it's the best idea. But,
My parents did that. I remember I had every diet inflicted upon me as a kid. And there was a period where my parents were eating raw meat. And I was just like, I'm not going to do this. You know, yeah. I was probably 12 years old and I was just like, no, this was one of the things where it's like, you want to excise all white things, onion, cabbage, turkey, cheese. Like all white foods are bad, period. And I was like, okay, fine. And then there was another time where it was like, all red foods are bad. Red cabbage, red onions are out. Red peppers are out. Red meat is out. And so I went along with most of the diets, but when it came to raw meat, and by the way, I today will crush a steak tartare. I love it. And I've been to a Japanese steakhouse, which served as a course, raw liver. And you got a little sauce, but you got these tiny little pieces of raw liver and you dipped it in the sauce and it was pretty damn good. I would never pick up a liver and just bite out of it. That's just me. It's not something I'm interested in.
I don't think most people would. That makes me want to vomit.
Yeah. It just, and then as far as keto goes, like I thought for years that keto was the be all end all to dieting. And what happened was after I lost a bunch of weight and wasn't losing weight anymore, I had to, without knowing I was doing it, basically cut calories to get anywhere. And when I finally realized like, I'm just
It's just how much I'm eating at this point, because I'm not losing weight unless I'm restricting food on fucking keto, which I thought I never would have to do. I was like, well, what happens if I just restrict food and eat carbs? And it was the same. I lost yes. weight. I actually felt better. So that's why I don't do that. But it's like, you know, I don't know, man. I think that talking about choice, you got to take into consideration that, like, what, you know, not everybody is a PhD in nutrition. So yeah. you're obese. Okay. Don't be obese anymore. Make that decision. Okay. What does that mean? What's next? What do they eat? What, you know, what's your plan, Mr. It's a Choice?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. There are people with PhDs in nutrition that have obesity too. So clearly, you know, something else is going on.
Right.
Even most of my patients tell me there's some that just don't know what the hell's going on, but there are majority of them. A lot of them follow me and they go, I know exactly what to do. I know what to do. I just can't do it. It's too hard to do it.
Yeah.
Cause it's, you know, again, going to more analogies, like imagine you have whatever, an apple, and you got something high calorie, you know, whatever, French fries or something. And, you know, to most people, like, just eat the apple. It's like, imagine you have those kind of choices all day. And I'm just kind of nudging you to go eat the, in your ear, come on, go eat that. That's kind of I don't know if that's what if you could describe what your brain kind of chemistry was going on, your signals going on, but that's basically what my patients tell me. It's just like, I know I should eat that other thing, but it's just like, I'm just so driven to this other food. It's not choice necessarily.
Well, yes, a lot of that, but then there would also be instances where I would be actively deciding not to do something, and then almost like I'd blacked out, come to doing the thing. And it's not like I was literally unconscious, because a lot of it involved driving to a place and doing the thing. But there would be this thing of like, don't do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do this. And then I'm doing it. And I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to do this, you know? Yeah. And so I don't know, you know, and you want to say it's all weakness. Okay. I think that today it's a choice. That said, for me personally, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. it's a choice. That said, there could be a disruption in my life that sends me off into a universe where I'm not actively making that choice, and something, some unwanted result occurs that I'm not going, yes, I want this to happen. I'm making this decision, you know, analytically. But I don't think it would have been useful to try to get me to change by telling me one day you'll really be able to think clearly about this. Okay. Or even today, you should be able to think really clearly about this. You're in the thick of it. All it requires, you got here based on your own determination, and you chose your way into this state, and now you have to choose your way. I just don't think, like, you know, I like the rah, rah, it's shit's going to be hard, and you got to fucking wait to figure out how to like that suck. You know, like, I like that. That message wouldn't have resonated with me 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I was fragile, you know, and like, I just don't know how if the intent is like, we need to get a lot of people out of this condition, I think it's a bad scheme. I really do.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I mean, that's what I do all day, talking to people. And so hopefully people listening are just kind of like, oh, okay. I kind of think of this a little bit differently. I don't know. Right. I don't know. Hopefully at least one person listening to this thinks a little bit.
By the way, as far as woke, I'm not really a woke person. I am a person who I want to understand different perspectives. I want to, you know, listen to people talk about things that I actually really disagree with and figure out how they're right
that's what I'm, I really want to do that a lot of the times. And so like, I can see the perspective of it's a choice. I just think that the people who are usually saying that are saying that from a place of having no idea what it's like to make that choice.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you're having empathy the other way.
Yeah. I'm trying to
put yourself in their shoes. I agree. I mean, cause I was probably more like that back in, you know, younger, and I now am like trying to help people see it differently. And so I understand where they're coming from, but to me, it's just a lack of really understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Doc, thank you so much. This has been a really fun conversation, and I hope we have simultaneously pissed some people off and maybe changed some minds.
I hope so too. Thanks for having me on. It's always a good discussion.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Michael Pena.
Oh, buddy, what's going on?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm in an airport right now.
Well, thanks for making the time for this call. I wanted to see how this last week has been.
So this last week, you know, what's good about like I've basically been keeping up with this walking thing.
Yeah.
And if it's, you know, basically what's really helped out is I was trying to get ready for a golf tournament, you know, that we had in Lake Tahoe, but I only had a couple of weeks. But that the default, I was walking by default, you know what I mean? So I was walking at least 20,000 steps a day. And then I measured myself again, and I'm 192.
That's amazing.
I was like, whoa, dude, this is crazy, dude. I mean, this is just nuts, because I've been killing myself, like, in the past to, you know, to lose weight and stuff. And, you know, just walking, just being steady and walking every day, and sometimes a couple times a day, you know, just to make sure that, like, I feel like I'm burning some calories or getting the, you know, the body started. It's working like a charm. I don't know if I'm going to have to, you know, take it up another notch when I get closer to what I want to be. But now I think I could lose like maybe 18 more pounds and get in the fighting weight. You know what I mean?
So awesome, dude. Yeah. And the great thing about walking is you can do that every day. Like, it's not like you're beating the body up so bad that you have to take days off from walking.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually got some shoes. I got some Hokas. They're not paying me to, you know, for advertising or whatever, but like these Hokas are, you know, they're lifesavers. If you got, you know, bad knees or hips or whatever, they're super comfortable. It's like, just get yourself like a good walking shoe. And to be honest with you, like with my diet, I haven't been like 100%, but for some reason it still holds up, you know, cause I've been in airports and stuff. So I'm like, I'll have like a sandwich or something, and then, you know, some carbs here and there, like, and as long as you stay, I'm going to say 90% good, you know, without going crazy and, you know, eating like a box of chocolates or something, like your body responds to it.
Yeah.
Like I'm kind of amazed by it. And like, I can definitely see the difference. I'm like, the belt loops, I could see that there's one that I haven't worn in yet.
Right.
That where I'm at right now. So I'm kind of stoked. Some of the, you know, my pants are, you know, feeling kind of big and stuff. So this is good.
That's amazing, dude. Yeah. I always think if I want to lose weight, I there has to be more effort put towards the idea behind dieting than the opposite, than like the, like, well, I'm in this tricky situation. But I completely agree with you. I think if we get wrapped up in having to be absolutely one way or the other, we can get, it's just like impossible. And then why even try to do that?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other reason that I'm really stoked about this is, like, you know, I used to love to run.
Yeah.
And, you know, do things like that and box and jump rope and stuff like that. But if I come back and I'm 30 pounds over, and then I decide all of a sudden to, it's basically like jogging with a weighted vest.
Right.
It makes absolutely no sense. My ligaments and muscles aren't really strong enough to like all of a sudden be surprised with this amount of weight and pressure. and then my meniscus, you know, little things, everything will, you know, aggravate it. So, you know, I think, and also like I'm feeling a little better, just more energy. I'm normally super nervous for this, you know, this golf tournament.
Right.
And I was able to like somehow like just manage them much better. I don't know if the two and two go together, but maybe it does. Who knows? Maybe it's psychosomatica. Who knows?
Yeah. No, I hear you. I find I'm generally more adept to take on anything that comes up when I'm eating in a manner that is like more geared towards long-term survival than geared towards like debauchery and gluttony.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. All right. Well, I'm fucking so happy for you. Have a safe flight. Thanks for taking the time to check in with us. And I will, I'll hit you up and either text you this week, or if you're busy and I can't get a hold of you, we can just talk over text, or I'll try to call you sometime later this week.
Yeah, that sounds great, dude.
All right, brother. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.